Welcome to Geek Culture Online. I'm Patrick Mullen. I'm your host, as always. Now, we're at the finish
end.
Line.
The end. This is it.
Yeah, we're on the last, the 22nd film of
the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yes, finale.
The end of Phase 3. Well, actually, Endgame is the end of Phase 3.
Right.
But we're done. Now, keep in mind that today we're talking about Ant-Man and Wasp, and technically the next one was Captain Marvel, but we went ahead and did that one because it came out, and we wanted to get on that so everybody was familiar with it.
Right.
So we're just going to jump right in. We are here with just Larry again.
Hello.
Now, Ethan will be back for our pregame.
To Endgame.
To the Endgame.
Right.
Now, keep in mind that, yes, we released two podcasts back-to-back because Marvel moved up Endgame and kind of threw everything off. And the Endgame pregame is coming out 2 days after this one posts.
Right.
So we're going to have three within 4 days.
Right. So again, we're going to be – so this one that you're listening to now is about Ant-Man and the Wasp. Fantastic film.
Mm-hmm.
Just as good as the original Ant-Man, which I loved.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're going to have a podcast about the – like the pre-game or pre-show to Avengers Endgame. And again, we're going to discuss the trailers and much, much more.
Well, we're only going to talk about is what has been the official release.
Right. Reddit, no spoilers, no garbage, no rumors.
Well, now, if you're part of, been following everything that's out there, there is forums, there's fan theories, there's Reddit streams, there is other things that are flying all over
But I've gone black on a lot of that stuff. I don't want to see it.
Well, going dark is a good thing at this point because I don't know if anybody's been following it, but a large chunk of the film has been released into
the wild.
Leaked
on the internet, right.
It was not done by Marvel or Disney. It is out there.
Right.
So
but
if
again,
if you really don't want to hear anybody talk about this, I would suggest going completely dark unless it's from an official source.
Right,
such
like
as
Marvel Studios,
DC,
Disney, right,
or
ABC TV, because ABC is owned by Disney. They've been running interviews, commercials. They've been running stuff almost every
day. Anything that's official, because
right.
Otherwise it's going to be not going to be spoiler free is the word I was looking
for. And
so now, what we're going to do is we're going to do a down and dirty here. This is Ant-Man Wasp.
Ant-Man Wasp, right.
And keep in mind that up to this point, Marvel films when they're released, it's chronological order to the MCU timeline.
Correct.
Except for Captain Marvel and obviously.
But that was a flash. That was a period piece.
That was a period piece, just like Captain America.
Sure.
The first Avenger was a period.
A large chunk of it.
Except for the last part of it.
That's true. Almost all of it, right?
Besides period pieces, when the film comes out, the films that come before and after, it's in chronological order.
Right.
Now, keep in mind that Kevin Feige, the head of the MCU for Marvel, has said going forward, the films coming out will not be in chronological order.
Right.
Okay.
So after Endgame.
End of Phase 3,
right.
They're done, and then they're going on to Phase 4, which, again, is going to be entirely different. We have no idea what
actually, they've actually, no joke, we're talking about spoilers and leakage of footage. Besides Spider-Man Far From Home, which is the only thing really on the docket for 2019 besides Endgame
Marvel.
For Marvel.
Well, technically under the umbrella of Marvel, then you can go Dark Phoenix.
Sure. Okay. All right. But let's just say Marvel.
The MCU.
Right, MCU. But here's my point. They've been very quiet about – I mean, they're like literally like waiting for Endgame to launch, hopefully make their billions of dollars on Endgame, and then they can breathe their sigh of relief and then, take a deep breath, and then I think we'll get more information. Again, we'll keep you – I'm sure you, Patrick, and we'll keep all the listeners abreast of all that. I think the most important thing, though, is Ant-Man and the Wasp is crucial to the MCU and crucial to Endgame.
Well, the Russo brothers, who directed
Endgame, right? Infinity War as well.
You know, 2, 3, and 4.
Right.
And they did Civil War, and they did one more. But they're saying we're getting into Endgame. Let's just go right.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
We'll talk about all this stuff.
I think what you're going to say is the crucial movies to see in the MCU. If you can only see a few, right? This is the point you're trying to make?
Because the Russo brothers said, you know, they only mentioned the films they directed.
Which is a little self-serving. But the
subplots that have been running through since Civil War is the relationship between Tony and
Captain America, right? Yeah. Right. So then Steve Rogers.
The linchpin to the whole thing, because you know, without the Avengers working. The chemistry working together, then if they're always bumping heads,
right? They can never beat Thanos. They have no chance of beating Thanos,
right?
But what
people are hinting, and we're getting into fan theory.
But let's go back though very briefly. Remember Ant-Man came out in 2015, the original Ant-Man,
mm-hmm.
and then Ant-Man Scott Lang, which is played by Paul Rudd. Mm-hmm. He's
a nice guy. I met him.
Okay, very cool guy. He is also, I think he's important to the battle at the airport in Germany in Captain America Civil War. I think he's crucial to that battle. So again, listeners, you know, maybe you say, well, it's Ant-Man, it's not that important. I mean, if you listen to the podcast on Ant-Man, I gave it a massive thumbs up and I loved it. And I'm giving the same thing right now, right up front. I'm going to tell you, this is a buy. I mean, this is a buy or a stream, because this is crucial.
Because they talk about the quantum realm. Because
exactly.
The fan theory is talking about time travel.
Right.
So they delve deeply into time travel and the quantum realm in this one, and they kind of explain the mechanics as far as Hank Pym knows.
Right. So let's kick off the movie. Again, I was watching this movie again recently to bone up on the movie. Mm-hmm. And again, when I started the movie on my smart TV, I was like, wait. Like, they skipped the beginning credits or something. But they didn't. They literally dive right into the movie, this opening scene. Boom. Like a cold open, basically. Like a TV show.
Yeah, and there's an overview. There's a voiceover.
Hank Pym talking
to his Hope, his daughter.
Right. He's talking to Hope.
And explaining what that little scene we saw in the first one about, you know, what led up to Wasp and Ant-Man disabling the
ICBM in 1987, right? Their secret mission.
Yeah, because they were working for S.H.I.E.L.D. at the time.
Correct, exactly. And again, you see a good chunks of that 1987 in the original Ant-Man.
And then but now here, they do a little backstory to that.
Backstory, and they explain really, and you see kind of the pre what happened with the ICBM, the Soviet ICBM,
mm-hmm.
and the post, which is
they just still didn't explain why his suit was damaged,
no.
and I don't think we'll ever find out.
No.
They were on some mission which went awry.
Right.
Missiles were launched. They managed to catch up to the ICBM.
Right.
His suit was damaged to the point where
he can't shrink down.
To disable the missile.
But Wasp can.
Janet
the original Van Dyne.
Wasp.
Correct.
The only way to get through that is to go microscopic.
Subatomic, so
they can get through the atoms and molecules of the plating to get to the missile's mechanics.
And in this scene, of course, the setup is he has the voiceover. He's talking to his daughter saying, I'm sorry, honey, we have
to go. Because he lied to her because he says that she died in a car accident.
Right, which at this opening scene we find – we knew from the first movie,
mm.
but there's more background here.
Mm.
And so you can see, and it's very touching, the daughter, I don't know the actress's name, that plays Hope Van Dyne, she's pleading, no, please don't go. And, of course, it's very tough because, of course, they both leave.
Mm.
They leave with a babysitter. And, of course, they show some of the scenes where they're riding the ICBM. His regulator isn't working, so hers is. She goes subatomic, and they actually show her.
She disables the regulator because obviously it's almost kind of like a brake. You can only go so small to protect yourself because he knows that if he goes any smaller,
he'll be lost in the quantum realm.
She disables that, and boop, able to go through there, destroy the mechanics.
And they actually show her like going through like circuit boards, and where in like Ant-Man they don't show that. They show her like going through and disabling things and shorting things out.
Right.
And then she can't come back.
Well, she keeps shrinking. She's able to disable everything, but since she disabled the regulator, nothing's stopping her from keep shrinking.
Right, to
so she manages to destroy the missile before she goes too small,
right,
and then hits the barrier, the quantum realm,
right,
and goes through it.
Right, and she's, quote-unquote, we believe, lost forever.
Because there's no way of getting back, because he didn't know how to get back from there. He knows that he can only go so far,
right,
and his suit can't regulate
right
it.
But of course, in the first Ant-Man, as listeners know, Scott Lang, the cat burglar who becomes the new Ant-Man in this series, he actually does come back from the quantum
because
realm.
He overrides the suit and uses the two outside devices that was designed
correct
to be able to do
correct
that. So he managed.
But that's crucial. That's crucial to this plot line. And then we're getting so anyway. I'm gonna go back though. But then Hank Pym, Michael Douglas in this movie,
mm-hmm,
comes back, and you know he has to. He said, and he says, the most difficult thing I ever had to do was to explain to you, honey, that your mom was never coming back. And they show the young daughter.
And that's why I think that's why he retired from being Ant-Man, because they don't discuss him doing any other missions.
No.
But there's a scene in the first one where Howard Stark and
right
everybody else there, part of S.H.I.E.L.D., he basically walks out and leaves.
Right, that was 1989. That was 2 years after
yeah
this ICBM
yeah
incident with where his wife is presumably dead.
Yeah.
Or at least lost forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so the opening, the cold open scene is crucial to the, I think, the Ant-Man history.
Well,
you know, of what happened to the family.
The motivation between Hank
yes
and everything else. And then all the other people in part of S.H.I.E.L.D. and
yes
Janet and all this
yes
stuff.
Yes, the
and
Janet, his wife, his daughter Hope.
And why he refused to let
Hope
put
become
on
the
suit.
Wasp, right.
Yeah,
he didn't want to lose her.
Yeah, because it happens if the regulator fails on her suit.
Right, right.
So therefore, that's why he found Scott, because he was expendable.
Right, he was a cat burglar. I mean, he
yeah
wasn't family.
But he had an engineering background, so he got somebody
right
that is an engineer who is a cat burglar. So he knows a whole bunch of about electronics. So therefore,
right,
okay, if his suit shorts out, he's an engineer. Maybe he can fix
maybe
something.
Maybe right. Which
he understands the electronics. So as being expendable, Hank can go to Scott and go like, okay, I'm going to send you on this one way mission, but you're going to understand that your mind's going to be able to wrap around
right
this if I explain something to you.
Right.
So
right.
So it was the best of both worlds, and
absolutely
so he kept Hope at arms with, and
right
then and now all the pieces come together with this explanation of his motivation from the first film.
Right, right. So it ties the loose ends of Ant-Man.
It answers all the questions of his motivation.
Right. So after this opening scene, so he's explaining to his daughter
mm-hmm
what really happened.
Right.
Right. In this, with the voiceover and everything like that. Then where do we go? We go to, I mean, I guess they really kind of jump into the whole.
Scott's at house arrest.
That's right. Then we jump to Scott. He's playing with his daughter and stuff like that.
Yeah, and he's doing this like a little venture.
Right. Like a Ford, like a big Ford, like in a house, like a haunted house.
Almost
you know, really
a la Indiana Jones, because
right
they go through all this thing of where Louise and him are got this like giant mechanical ant they build,
right, right,
and they're
right,
going
right,
through
right
all this thing, and
right
then they use a paper plate as a contact lens to unlock their
right,
to
safe,
get the,
right, right,
and to get the statue that
right
she wants to take to show and tell
right,
yeah,
but
because it's the statue, the little, it's a little trophy that says the world's greatest grandma,
right, which
yeah
she gave to her father Scott Lang on Father's Day,
yeah,
and she goes that's the only one that they had,
yeah,
so you're the world's greatest grandma,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
So yeah, so it's a cute scene. Now that trophy comes into very important play later
right
in the movie, but we'll discuss it
yeah
a little bit.
And then the FBI agent Jimmy Woo goes over there, and
right
they keep testing it because he's wearing an anklet
bracelet
because he's on house arrest.
He's on house, right, right. So,
and because he's not wearing the suit and the anklet bracelet's on him, obviously he can't shrink out of it.
Correct.
Because
exactly
he's not wearing the suit.
Correct, right. No, he's not wearing the Ant-Man suit. He's in like civilian clothes. He's in house arrest in his house in San
yeah
Francisco.
And the only reason why Jimmy Woo shows up is because one of the part of him playing with his daughter, he made this slide out of the stairs staircase in the house, and his foot kicks through the fence, which is the border of
the
his
GPS,
house arrest.
Right. So it triggers the, it. And so Jimmy Woo, who's played by Randall Park from Fresh Off the Boat,
Fresh Off the TV show, also wasn't he in the My Crazy Rich
Asians, I think so. Yeah. Actually, I was about to watch it this week, and I didn't. But anyway.
I missed it in the theater because that came out at the same time as two other movies. And, again, amount of fun.
It was a busy time. Yeah, anyway, I have it on the DVR, so I'm going to watch Crazy Rich Asians. But anyway, so Randall Park, he's hilarious as the lead FBI agent. So they
come. Which is really interesting is because it's not S.H.I.E.L.D.
It's the FBI.
The S.H.I.E.L.D. could have stepped in at any time and not allowed him to get under house arrest. So they went dark, and then what?
Right, there's no S.H.I.E.L.D. in this movie. Well,
no, there isn't.
No, there isn't. It's the FBI, basically.
Yeah, it's the FBI.
Now, again, let's just remind people, again, if they've seen the movie, if they have, they catch you up. Scott Lang, the new Ant-Man, he's on house arrest. Because of his involvement in Germany during Captain America Civil War, and he violated, or they all violated, the Sokovia Accords, which is a UN established agreement. So again, that's why
he's one of the
ones. 2 years.
Yeah, and he was. He didn't sign it, or did he sign it?
I don't think he signed it. I don't remember. Well, I know Captain America didn't
sign
it. Well,
what side? He was on Iron Man's side, so therefore he was for it. Because
I don't remember
Captain America is being against it.
Right. Remember?
I don't know if anybody signed it, but it doesn't matter if they signed it or not. That was the accord,
right?
And that was
and
the
it
law
was violated,
was laid down.
And so he's been under he has to be under house arrest.
And so was Hawkeye, but we don't know what happened to him.
Right, well, he's not in this movie, but right. So after they, the false alarm of the breach of the, the ankle bracelet through the fence. Jimmy Woo, the FBI, the lead FBI agent, they're saying, look, you only got 3 more days,
he's been on house arrest for 2 years.
Right, for almost 2 years. He's saying, you just got this weekend to get through, and that's it. We'll come back and take it off.
So
you better be in your best behavior.
So now, if you really think about it, this whole entire movie went over 3 days?
Yes.
Okay, now keep that in
but
mind.
But basically about 2 years after the whole Captain America Civil War.
Yeah, okay. Now... And now
try to piece the timeline together for all the listeners, because this is crucial.
Well, yes, because while this is going on in California, right?
Correct, San Francisco. Yes.
Okay. So
Bay Area.
Technically California doesn't have any other superheroes except for Ant-Man.
I think you're correct. Yes.
Technically,
yes.
We can't really count.
I mean, Thor can be anywhere. I mean, remember the original Thor was based in New Mexico. Remember with Jane.
Oh, that's where the hammer fell.
Right. That's where the hammer fell. And right.
But
exactly.
It could have fallen anywhere.
Correct. But I mean, that's not California, right?
No.
There's really nobody else.
On the West Coast.
No, like Hawkeye is probably somewhere in Middle America.
And in Colorado.
Right. And Colorado. Okay. And then, like Captain America, Falcon, they're all like in D.C. or on the East Coast.
Well, yeah,
upstate New York was the Avengers
because the
headquarters
are Shields there.
New York. Really, I think he's the only one in California officially. Yeah,
okay.
I think that's a good marker.
So, okay, going by that account, so anything else that's going on in the world, like Sokovia.
Right,
or
which is Europe.
Yeah, or anything else like that, or even like since the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show is, happening at the same time.
Right.
So that is all over the globe, too. And they
Correct.
Haven't really had any adventures from the TV show in California for several seasons.
Okay.
So technically, they're in Europe, too, right now.
Okay.
So, and in Maine from last season.
Okay, Maine.
Maine.
And, of course, as we know... I mean, obviously, the ending of, well, not the ending, but Captain America Civil War ends, obviously the big battle in Germany. They're in Hungary, remember, and all that, with Black Panther chasing, Bucky, right?
Right.
It's Bucky,
they think is the
assassin.
And Black Panther takes place in Africa, in...
Wakanda, Seoul, Busan, South Korea, right?
So it's all, off
right, part Nigeria,
off of North
right,
America.
Right. It's Asia and Africa, right? So,
yeah. It's not that that they intentionally kept everybody away. It's just that nobody was in this area of the
country.
Nobody
was in, right, exactly.
So
I mean, people were either overseas.
They weren't written now. It's just that there is no chance of any pass crossing.
Right, and again, not possible. Right.
Okay.
Again,
except for the very last of the movie, which is impacting.
Right.
Impactful.
We'll get to the end. Right.
Okay. So, we'll skip right to the end. Okay. Ta-da. And then what happens in the last 5 minutes?
Right. Patrick always does this. When I say I haven't seen the movie yet, Patrick, you have. That's what I always say.
Yeah.
Anyway. So we lay down why he's under house arrest. He only has a weekend left. That's all he's got is this long weekend to do. And they show him, like, you know, he's exercising, he's drumming.
His daughter, Cassia, is picked up by the mom and the
stepfather, whatever. I don't know if they're married or not, but whatever.
Who's a
cop, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so they pick her up because they got to go back to her place. This is his Scott's place.
Right.
And so now he's like, okay, well, that was apparently this was his weekend, and now he's like, okay, well, I'm bored. So they show him doing all these things.
Like a montage of different, like, you know,
he's time killers.
Right, he's reading, he's taking a bath, he's playing music.
He does all this, but then he takes a bath, a bubble bath,
right.
And he goes into a dream sequence. He falls asleep.
And this is crucial, right?
It ties everything together a little bit, right. Because he sees himself going through all these, like, quantum realm things.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, he's in this house that he recognizes as Hank Pym's house.
Correct. And his house. Right. Yeah. Exactly. But also in San Francisco.
He's been in Hank Pym's house.
Yes, he has. He cracked the safe and stole the Ant-Man suit, actually. Right.
Yes. And so then all of a sudden, he's playing with this kid that he doesn't recognize.
Right. It's not his daughter.
Yeah. And then he opens up this wardrobe.
Right. Well, I'd call the chest of drawers or armoire, but it's called a wardrobe as well, as we learn.
Yes. And there's the kid there, and then there's a mirror on the inside. He looks up, and it is...
It's Janet, right?
Janet
Van Dyne, which is Hank Pym's wife.
Who's the original wasp,
who's lost, at least in the quantum realm, as we know.
And she acts shocked, and she touches her face.
Right.
Like, he's shocked because he thinks it's himself, and he snaps away.
Exactly. So it's a very odd dream. I mean, I'm watching this, I'm like, what the hell's going on?
In the first film, do we ever see a picture of Janet?
I don't think so.
Because it's Hank Pym's house, so there should be a picture of them somewhere.
They don't show it. At least I don't remember them showing it. If they went through, it was just the background.
Because it couldn't be in a subconscious.
No. They never showed it.
A fluid dream, so you're seeing.
Well, I'm watching this scene. I'm like, what is? Because I noticed it was Hank Pym's house. I noticed it wasn't Scott's house right away. Even though both are in San Francisco and they're both like these Victorian homes.
Right.
But I go, what is going on? I go, okay, whatever. And then he snaps out of it in the bubble bath.
But he's very concerned, so he goes to and pulls out a hidden phone, a flip phone, and he calls Hank. He's like, I'm having this really bad dream.
Right, but he was a little hesitant, and they said this earlier with Jimmy Woo, I think, with the FBI agent, that they're having some banter saying how Scott Lang and Hank Pym are not on good – they're not on good terms anymore.
Well, because he took the suit without his permission to go to Civil War.
Correct, exactly.
He swiped the suit. He went over the border without permission.
Right.
He picked a side.
Right.
And he just leveled an airport.
If you had to pick one Avenger who did the most damage at the airport in Germany, it would be Ant-Man, but he was you know, giant man, basically.
Well, yeah.
In the movie. So anyway.
Yeah, so yeah.
So he was hesitant to call Hank Pym, but he does call.
Yeah.
He gets his voicemail and leaves a voicemail message. Now, what happens after that, Patrick? Within like a minute, a couple minutes.
Well, a commercial happens.
Sure.
And then I went and got another snack. And then the movie came back on.
Exactly.
So is that what you're waiting for?
Yes. Eat your Frosted Flakes, Patrick.
You know,
anyway.
So they show Scott apparently hours later, because it's now dark and he's watching TV and he's eating something, and he hear this buzzing sound, and he slaps his neck because he gets bitten by something.
Right, but he should know better. I'm like, don't do that, because you know it's not a real bug. I knew it was something to do with, you know, ant.
Well, it could have been an ant that was drugged.
True.
But he passes out and he wakes up next to Hope, in a van.
Right.
And he's like, what am I doing here?
He's like, whoa, 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 I can't be here. I can't be here. You know, I'm violating my parole. I can't be here.
And then she points, yeah, she points to his ankle. Right. He's not wearing his ankle bracelet.
Right.
So his ankle bracelet is back at the house, but how is it not triggering it? Because if you cut it off or take it off, it will still trigger.
They don't show you that, but of course then they show.
Yes, they do.
They do.
Yeah, because they go like, you know, then they.
Well, I remember what they do is they have one of their aunts.
Yeah,
who's like a life-size aunt.
Yeah, I think it's Antonio?
Maybe it is Antonio.
Well, the aunt is wearing the ankle bracelet and he's chewing up the box of cereal while watching TV.
Right.
Because they told the aunt to duplicate what he normally
does. To mimic
all
his moves. Right. So he's doing that.
Yeah, he's doing the same thing.
He's playing the drums. He's doing all kinds of goofy stuff that Scott was doing over his normal routine.
So they go back. Yeah.
Well, but right.
The van is really small.
Right. Exactly.
It's microscopic.
Not microscopic.
It's hot wheel size.
Hot wheel size. Right. So she's cruising on, which is always funny. But you think like you're in the van, like the regular car sounds, and you hear like it's like a sign. It's a Hot Wheels. There's barely any noise at all.
And they pull up in front of a building, and they go big size, regular size,
right.
And they go into this building, and it looks pretty much abandoned. It's an office building that's pretty much closed down.
It looks like a standard office building you would find in any major city around the world.
And
basically,
it's pretty much like there's plastic over thing, so it's pretty much shut down.
Right, and I'm like, why are they going there? Right.
Yeah. He was thinking the same thing, and there was Hank there, and they're putting something together. And basically, what they were building was a quantum tunnel.
Right. What they've been working on, and again, Hank and Hope talk to him and say, look, we really kind of need you is what they want.
Well, so what was happening was that since the voiceover at the beginning and when he was explaining all of this, that he says that since Scott was able to go to pass the quantum realm
and return
come back
safely in one piece, right?
Yeah, he pulled out his old blueprints for the quantum tunnel and says that if he can do it.
Right.
I can fix what was wrong to be able to use the tunnel.
And go back and get my wife and get Janet back because, again, and Hope wants to do the same thing.
They're thinking that she's alive because if he survived it, there's a
possibility
she could have survived.
Right. They don't know.
It's been a 30-year gap. So, at this point, anything could have happened.
True.
But they fired up the quantum tunnel engine.
But before they do, I think the key thing is they kind of like they question Scott. Remember, they're questioning him like, you had this dream, right?
That's the reason why they went and got him.
Right,
is because they fired off the tunnel, but it shut down because of the.
That's right. Because like
something wasn't balanced right.
Right.
And he says the second we fired it up, then we got your phone call. So it's just like
like what I thought of was like in Star Trek First Contact. It's almost like when the USS Enterprise did warp drive. That's when the Klingons came. Remember, he first goes in the warp drive off Earth in that spaceship, not the Enterprise.
Yeah, it was 2063, and that was the first time we ever fired off a warp drive engine.
A warp signature core, and then the Vulcans.
I was going to let you sit there and struggle.
But that's a different movie altogether.
But they were flying through our universe and picked up the warp signature,
right.
And they realized that we
had advanced technology and they should meet us.
Yeah, and that's why that first contact.
Right, the movie. So with that in mind, that's what I thought of when I heard when this scene.
That's 24 years away. No, it's 44 years away.
Yeah, no, it's a little ways. We're working on it. Anyway, I'm sure my son's working on it. Anyway, the astrophysicist. Anyway, well, he took astrophysics. Anyway, my point to you is, so that's what I thought of. Is that okay? So they turn on the quantum tunnel, but it didn't work. It's like a warp core. It's like a signature. Boom! It's like a broadcast message.
From them being able to open it up, somehow or another, Janet was able to send a signal through.
Correct.
Yeah,
exactly.
Somehow or another, she realized something opened up.
Right. That's like a connection to the real world. I mean, not from the quantum world. And then, so the key thing is, they start quizzing Scott about okay. You were in Hank's house, this different house, yes. And then you went to you were in this room with a with it. He's like some sort of furniture. So, yeah, what kind of furniture? And he called it a wardrobe. He's like, what do you mean wardrobe? And so I didn't know it was called a wardrobe either, but it's a wardrobe.
You've
it's
like never dealt with a wardrobe?
Well, I mean, I've dealt with a chest of drawers.
There is a tunnel behind those where you can go to this place called Narnia.
Oh, well, you know, I did not know that. But that's another podcast series.
The
Lion,
the Witch, and Wardrobe?
Yes, yes.
You ever read the book or seen the movie?
I'm sorry. I really didn't put that. I didn't connect that all together. But that's just me. I thought when they meant the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, they meant the clothing. I kid you not. I've never, until I saw this movie, knew that was called a wardrobe. I'm not kidding you. It was an armoire, chest of drawers.
A wardrobe is like a closet you're able to move around.
Right. But again, I never use that terminology. My family never. We never use that, even though we're English, part English and Scottish. Okay. So enough about furniture design.
Or
shop
your,
at IKEA.
Or your lack of closets.
Whatever. Lack of closets. Exactly. So they're quizzing him. They're like, yes, a wardrobe. And then she said, yes, I always hid in this drawer when I played hide and seek with my mother.
Well, yeah. So that's why they knew it was her, because how would he know all this? Because he had never
met her
or any of this.
He didn't know them when she was a child and all that. So they knew that the mother somehow planted a message into his brain because he was in the quantum realm.
Or was able to reach out to him.
Because
the only reason why she was able to do that is because he had been in that realm. Or that she couldn't have done that.
Correct.
Because if they fired off the tunnel without a receiver to the signal, that would have never happened.
Exactly. So that's why they kind of kidnapped him, basically.
Well, yeah, because they wanted to know why does he know? And so he explained everything that he was able to do. And what's interesting is while they're working on this, and Hank's directing all these ants to put this together.
Right.
So before, apparently, he had built a previous tunnel which didn't work.
Correct.
Yeah. Now he's got all these ants helping him, which is kind of cool.
Right.
And so they were like, okay, fine, we got to go, and we got to go get get another component.
Right. Kind of like the last major component is what they say.
Yeah. So they leave the building, and then they decide to take the building with them.
Right.
And they shrink it down to a rolling case.
Right. Like a carry-on suitcase on an airplane, basically.
Yes.
With the handle and everything.
With the handle, yes. And so apparently, Hank took a case, expanded it, revised it into a building, and then shrank it back down.
Right. Well, it's a cute visual aid. It's really funny. Most people can relate to it. So, yeah, so then they go to
this hotel
with
a villain, right. And I've forgotten the
Sonny
villain's
Birch.
Name.
Sonny Birch. Sonny Birch is the villain. He's he's kind of like the –
He's a black market guy.
He's a black market guy that's been selling –
high-tech pieces.
These that he's getting from the black market.
Because they got to do it under the – because they're on the run. Because they're
right. –
because
– The FBI is looking for them.
Yes, because they supplied him they're thinking that Hank and Hope supplied him with the suit.
Correct.
Scott with the suit, so they're accessories
to
a crime.
Which is not true, but they don't know that, and they don't want to be arrested, because then that kills their research and exposes them.
So, therefore, they've been doing this on the down low. And
for basically, I guess, the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the dust-up in Germany was 2 years ago.
Yeah, so while he's been locked up, they figured out this out, so it's taken them this long to get all these components on the down low, and the last piece of the puzzle is with Sonny.
Right, Sonny Birch, right? He's like with his henchmen in this very swanky, like, boutique hotel in San Francisco.
Yeah, because he owns it.
Yes,
he owns it.
Right, he owns it, but he's sitting there, like, in like a little lounge. And, like, so Hank, Scott Lang, and Hope are all in the, this transit van. It's a Mercedes.
Well, she goes in because...
She goes in by herself, but she's the... Right,
yeah, because she's been calling herself Susan with him, but... See, the thing is that Sonny Birch has got a cousin or a relative that works for the FBI.
FBI, right? He's
so
like
he finds out who they really are.
Right.
So he goes like, okay, I know who you really are, so I want to use your powers that you have to do more bad things.
Right.
And so, she's like, no.
So in essence, she walks in with cash and like a duffel bag to buy this last remaining
component.
The last component to finish their quantum tunnel.
Because they're under a time limit.
Yes, exactly. And Sonny says, no, can do. I only sell it to you if I can use it with you.
Right.
And she's like, no can do.
Yeah, yeah. So it's basically, you know, it's just like he's going to hold this last component over them to force them to, you know, to do what they want. And she's like, no. So she leaves. She changes into the wasp costume.
Right.
And then, okay, and then it's going to... Okay, sorry about that interruption. I had to deal with relatives that I don't normally deal with. All right, so I lost my train of thought.
So basically, she's in the wasp outfit.
Yeah, so she changes the wasp, so she forcibly takes the component.
Right.
Yeah, she leaves the money. She doesn't care about that.
She's beating the shit out of the henchmen and Scott Birch. But there's a wild card in here.
Yeah, another supervillain shows up,
right.
Which we don't even know who they are.
We have no clue, but the supervillain is almost like a shadow.
It's a phantom.
It's like a phantom supervillain.
You can see through them, but you know. So yeah, is it like you don't know where they've come from or
it's
why
almost
they're
like,
there?
Like, right.
Is this phantom character working for Sonny?
We don't know, right? Yeah. They don't say, but Sonny looks surprised too, initially,
right.
And the henchmen are surprised.
Yeah, so they start beating each other. All three of them are like, it's
right.
Like a, what do they call that?
It's like everything goes haywire in this.
Because they're all, you know, they're all shooting each other. You know, they're all going after each other.
But everybody wants the component, including this phantom ghost. I was going to say the ghost even looks like she's... Like this ghost has like a cloaking device, like they cloak in and out, but it's not.
I guess it is a cloaking
device.
Well,
that's what I thought at first.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they're cloaking, they're hiding, but then, like you said, they're fading in and out sometimes. And of course, they're going through things. Right, they're going through things, like through physical objects.
They're going through things, and like this ghost thing will go through Wasp and then punch her.
The wasp punches her
and disappears
and connects. But sometimes it just punches right through her.
So it's not in her mind.
It's not consistent.
It's not a hologram.
It's the oddest, like, opponent or villain I could ever come up with, basically.
Because Vision can go through things.
Right. Right, but that's like temporary, because then otherwise he's like a solid.
He's able to control his density,
right.
And so he's
right.
You know. So.
But here, there's no control at almost. I mean, at least I didn't think there's control.
They wouldn't be able to, you know, fade through something and then punch them.
Right,
you know.
Right.
If they couldn't control, if they were fading through something and then went solid,
right.
I
thought this villain was somehow controlling it, but we find out that that she, because it's a lady. Is not in control of it.
Yeah.
This is the first time that they introduce Ghost.
Yeah, it's called Ghost,
nice.
And Hope does steal the component.
Yes.
And manages to get away with it.
Right.
While Wasp is fighting everything,
right.
Hank and Scott are in the van, and they're watching this because they're monitoring it somehow. And so he goes, oh, you gave her wings. And he goes, oh, wow, you gave her a blaster.
Right.
And he goes like, oh, well, I guess you didn't have that tech when you built my suit. And he goes, oh, no, I had that.
I did. I just wasn't prepared to give it to you.
Yeah.
But I think the key thing about this big fight scene in the hotel is that, okay, so Hope gets the component and Lang gets into the Ant-Man suit, you know, Scott Lang, to help Hope. He's like fighting with her,
but
too.
But it's not his suit.
It's a prototype that he pinned.
And he calls it a work in progress.
Right, right,
and he goes, what's the work in progress? So they manage to defeat the ghost
and take the component.
But the thing is that they can't go back to Hank's house. They can't go to Scott's house.
But the woman escapes with Hank Pym's lab. She takes the lab.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So they have the component. But now they still don't have all the pieces.
Yeah, well, yeah, they have
Sadly.
The one. You know,
they have the one piece, but everything else is gone.
Yeah, the tunnel's gone, but they
right.
have the component. So they end up going
to
Scott's office, which because his friends and everything
right.
who are ex-cons, they built a security firm.
Right, exactly.
And it's called ex-con offices.
Right.
And
right.
so they go there because they don't have any other place to go.
And they have this conversation. Hank has this conversation, I think, with Hope, and saying,
you know, we need to go and I
think what they're trying to do is trying to track the lab, and they can't do that without a component which is in the lab to be able to track the lab, right? Because the lab doesn't have
a tracking device, any type
of tracking device.
Right. So
they reside to the fact saying like, well, there's only one other guy that can actually deal with this because they've dealt with the quantum realm before
in the past,
and PIM particles,
right,
which is Bill Foster. Now, pulling right from the comics.
Okay, again, I did not know that. I thought this was a fascinating twist because this is Hank Pym's old partner or co-worker, or
probably from when they were working for S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
Because Bill Foster is a character from the comic books, and he was a character called Goliath.
Okay.
Gotcha. So they go visit.
Yes. That kind of comes up. Yes. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So they go back.
He's a university professor now.
Yes, that's what he's doing. He's apparently doing advanced physics.
He's teaching advanced physics.
So right. They go there and they confront him. They go like, "We need
They show up in the back of the class.
Yeah.
And so he sees him. He's kind of like, "Uh-oh." And so he goes, "You know, class, it looks like there's some heavy eyelids here, so I'm going to let you leave a little early today."
Yeah,
so that's his excuse. He gets them out on them. Right, and so then
But they go back to his office.
Right, now Bill Foster is played by Lawrence Fishburne, great actor, Morpheus. Yes. Anyway, and so they go back to his office.
And then they're talking about all this stuff, and they're kind of bringing him up to date. And he finds out that Scott had...
became giant.
He used the Ant-Man suit to become Giant Man,
right?
Was something that the suit wasn't really designed to do.
Okay.
But Bill Foster
and him, the professor, are saying, "Hey, like, how big did you get? Oh, really? I got this later."
Yeah, the tallest he got, or the biggest he got, was 21 feet.
Right.
But that was under controlled conditions,
sure.
Because you know that was the Goliath program. Because if you remember, was it? I think it was Avengers Ultron when Tony asked Jarvis to pull up everything about the Lazarus Project, the Goliath Project.
Yes, that was Ultron. Ultron.
Yeah. So this was
I missed
named,
that, but obviously.
Yeah.
Right. So this is fast forward. This is the they're discussing
the
Wendell Foster's part of the Goliath Project.
Right, yeah.
Interesting.
So they go like, "How big did you get?" And he says, "I got to 21 feet. How big did you get?" And he says, "I got to 65 feet.
And he's like, "Oh."
Yeah.
And then Hope is like, "You guys done, you know, measuring yourselves,
yeah,
you know, because
yeah.
you know, we have stuff, we have real work to do here, you know."
So they finally figured out, you know, that he says, "Well, you can use the regulator in the suit to be able to
track
the quantum signature from the tunnel and all the other components from the office."
Right. But the problem is that
Hank rebuilt the suits without the regulators.
Yes.
So
yes.
It just automatically stops. You know, so
correct.
He took out the component that Scott used to get past the quantum realm.
Right, for safety reasons. But I think the real key, and that's an important point in this scene in the Professor Bill Foster's office, I think what I took away the most was the antagonism, the animosity,
there was history there.
Yeah.
I think they were blaming each other for
the
Janet's problem.
The negative history. You know, Bill Foster definitely doesn't like Hank Pym, and Hank Pym doesn't really like Bill Foster either. I mean, there's a little clash. I mean, it's kind of unspoken at first, but you can tell that there's something that really went awry.
Yeah, so at this point of introducing Goliath, now they've introduced all the components that has happened in Ant-Man's history, because there was Hank Pym was Ant-Man, Yellow Jacket, Goliath, Giant Man,
the Wasp,
and Wasp was Janet was in there. So they even though that Hank Pym was all four of those characters, they've kind of broken them up into separate characters here in the MCU universe.
So they've checked all the major boxes of the comics.
They've touched on all the variations that Hank Pym particles can do.
And
also Scott Lang becoming the Ant-Man they've done it all. The only thing is that, you know, Hank Pym in the comics went bonkers before he realized that he had to build a helmet to protect his sanity, because they mentioned that in the first one with Yellowjacket. He says, "You don't have the protective helmet and he says, you got to calm down. And that's why
right.
why the guy that was playing Yellow Jacket was going bonkers, is because he didn't have the technology in the helmet to protect him. So
right.
therefore, you know, so that's interesting that that they've kind of glossed over
Bill Foster.
No. Not Bill Foster. Henry Pym going nuts. That's the only part of
yeah,
the history
that,
of Ant-Man.
Right. That's not in this. That's not in this, but that's in the
yeah.
comics. But
yeah.
I think the other the key thing here is, so, you know, he obviously visits his, you know, Bill Foster, his estranged partner, and, you know, they want to track down this ghost, you know, who captured their lab.
Mm-hmm. And so
but
yeah,
then,
so they figured out a way of doing it.
Yes.
And so they leave, and they realize... then they send Louise to Scott's house to get, you know, because he. Oh no! They go like, well, we can't make the tracker because we don't have a suit with the regular. And he says, I kept the suit.
Right.
And
he's
like,
he reveals it, and he says,
yeah,
oh, okay.
Okay.
Right.
So, you know, so because they probably Hank and Hope probably thought he turned it over either to the FBI or SHIELD.
Right.
Evidently, he did not.
No, of course he didn't. He's a good cat burglar. Yeah.
So therefore, they're like, I know where it's at, and they and he goes like, and he sends Louise to Scott's house because obviously they're trying to stay low and out of everybody's way.
Right, right.
And they find out that
because of course there's surveillance on there should be surveillance on Scott Lang's house,
right.
especially because they just had the little incident a couple of days earlier in the day.
Yes, and don't forget this is over a three-day
week.
Thing.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. So therefore, you don't ever see anybody sleep here.
No, but that's okay. But here's the other important thing about Mr. Professor Bill Foster. So you see, so we find out that the ghost is an actual person, an actual human. It's not a ghost. They show her like in her lab, like trying to sleep.
But
in this
did they do that already? Were they?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, this
no,
is kind of
like
a little break.
It's quantum-phasing Bill Foster, hats and sunglasses.
Right.
Oh. Well.
Yeah. This is like
know,
a little.
Here's another little inside joke.
Okay.
The funny thing is. Through all the MCU universe, the only way that people disguise themselves is a baseball cap
and
sunglasses.
Right, right.
And they do that,
right.
Scott mentions that, and he goes, like, you think this is really going to be a good disguise? Hats and sunglasses?
Is it only if you're going to a baseball game, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Or going
yeah.
out to the ballpark or something, right.
Yeah, so therefore... you know, that was the running gag that they kind of addressed that because that's the only thing that anybody ever wears as
yeah.
a disguise in any
right.
of the movies.
Right. Well,
and so
a lot of Hollywood actors do that too. It doesn't work for them either, but that's what most Hollywood actors do for some reason. They put
yeah.
on a wig
and then and during this conversation with Hank and Bill and everybody, Scott goes, "Do you always put the word quantum in front of everything?"
Yeah, exactly.
So
right.
it just
to make it sound important.
Yes, and
wow.
so you know, and so they scoot out of there, and they realize that that the only way they can get is, get track it is by using the old suit. And he goes, "I do have the old suit, but it's not at his house because it's hidden in the statue,
the
trophy
right.
that was given to him
by his Cassie. Daughter,
yeah.
right."
So
Cassie
brought it to show and tell.
And even though her father, Scott Lang, kept saying, please don't take it to
show
and tell.
No. Yeah, the biggest reason is because it's hidden inside there. So they go to Cassie's school, and they realize, well, the only way we're going to do this is by slipping in and out.
Right.
And so Scott's in
the prototype suit, and he's trying to shrink himself.
But the regulator doesn't work.
It's kind of off.
Because it's a prototype thing.
Right, exactly.
So it goes off and on,
right.
not at will.
Right.
And
so eventually they
do this great funny sequence where he's like the size of a little kid to being really big,
like a giant, right?
He gets stuck at like a kid's size when they finally get the suit back,
right.
and he climbs in the van and he goes like, and he says, "Did you have a good day at school? Do you want a juice box and string cheese?"
Right.
And
exactly.
he's like, he goes, "Ha ha ha! Wait a minute. Do you really have that?"
Right, right. So they get the other suit, they take it apart, they get the component, they track it.
To the track where the building is,
right,
so they
right.
can do it. And this is where we're introduced, find out that Bill...
Goes, right. Well, they find out, first we see Ava, her name is Ava,
mm-hmm.
and then you are introduced that
Bill Foster is actually trying to help this Ava.
And so you're thinking
Ava
like,
Starr.
And you're thinking like, is Bill Foster a bad guy now?
Right. That's
and
right.
Then they do a little backstory and they explain the history of Ghost is basically her parents were working on the prototype of the quantum tunnel.
Right.
Apparently, without Hank's knowledge, because he had the blueprints.
Right.
Because the tunnel explodes and kills the parents.
Are they
really dead? Because
we don't know. But officially, Ava Starr's father, Elias, again another person that's a former partner of Hank Pym. He dies, quote unquote, along with his wife during the experiment.
You never see their bodies.
You never see their bodies, right? But you see an explosion, and you see the daughter running towards daddy, and then so she gets kind of kicked back.
And the explosion gets caught in the wave of the explosion.
Of this quantum wave, and so she's like in this rubble, like unconscious basically. And so I think S.H.I.E.L.D. calls.
Yeah, S.H.I.E.L.D. gets a hold of Bill Foster because Bill Foster had worked on this before.
Correct.
And that's the
only reason
why they knew.
But there's like firefighters on the scene, thinking there's some sort of fire. And so they see, we have a survivor.
Yeah.
It's like a little girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like
she's phasing in and out.
Right, and so they're trying to grab her, hold her, and they can't grab her.
No.
And they're like, what is going on? You know,
yeah,
I mean?
Because he's the only one that S.H.I.E.L.D. Is aware that's still working for S.H.I.E.L.D. Because if Hank was working for S.H.I.E.L.D. at this point, he had already quit.
Right.
If he had still been there, he'd been part of this too.
Right.
So Bill Foster figures out that the only way to stabilize her is making a quantum cage of some sort so she's exposed to rays to stabilize her matter basically.
Right. And so she's a very bitter young woman. She's something in her 20s or something
They use it to her advantage. Here's an interesting
point.
She
gives the backstory. She says that she becomes like an assassin.
S.H.I.E.L.D. teaches her to be an agent.
Right. An assassin.
Yeah, so if she was she's probably around in her 20s now?
Yeah, I figured 25. Yeah,
okay,
that's what
so
I figured.
15 years ago, she was taught to be an agent.
Right.
So therefore.
Kind of like in the story, it's almost like a La Femme Nikita. Type of little flashbacks. They
so
show.
This happens in the 2000s.
I guess, yeah, that would
yeah,
be
so
like
that
around
was 2000. After Captain Marvel and
after Captain Marvel, right? After Nick Fury being the rookie agent.
Yeah, he was only level 3 at that point.
Right. This would be like 2000, maybe mid 2000s after 9/11 type of thing. Because they show her on different missions. Some look like East European missions. But some look like terrorist missions. I mean, they're showing it very quickly in like this little quote-unquote highlight reel that she's explaining.
No, because if you really think about the timeline, okay, we know that the final mission for Wasp was in 87.
87, where she
Hank
was
quits
in 89.
S.H.I.E.L.D. in 89.
You see that.
S.H.I.E.L.D., which was started back in the late 50s, early 60s, Nick Fury and Agent Coulson are part of S.H.I.E.L.D.
in 95. Captain Marvel appears on Earth.
On Earth, which
again.
Because Nick Fury wanted to quit, but this made him stick around.
Right, busy. He shot an alien
now,
in his car. So right
now in Winter Soldier, mm-hmm. With.
Nick Fury's in Winter Soldier.
Yeah, but Sundance. Robert Redford plays the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. at
correct,
that point.
Correct, yes.
And he's talking about how he made Nick head of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, yes.
Okay,
in a devious and dubious way.
Yeah, so in between 95 and whenever.
Right, well, I'm
wondering. Redford was assigned Nick Fury the head of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
So therefore, Nick had climbed up the ranks enough to be then promoted to this position. So did Nick initiate the Ghost Protocol then?
We don't know. I mean, this is kind of it's not discussed. I mean, Nick Fury's not a character in this movie at all.
But since he was hired by S.H.I.E.L.D., how much did he play with this? Was this a Robert Redford mission, or was this Nick Fury mission?
They talk about Bogota, they talk about Colombia, right? They talk about going to Colombia. Remember, Nick Fury and, yeah, so
We don't know. And again, it's such a quick highlight reel of Ava Starr's missions.
Right.
But again, it was like a Femme Nikita type of thing. Like, you know, her, you know, they showed her like fighting off and, you know, becoming like, she can't really control. So she'd punch the guy and then she'd disappear and
right.
he'd try to punch her and then, you know, she was almost, you know, but, so invincible.
She go dark at this point and to go back to Bill Foster because obviously he was brought in when she was a kid, before she was taught.
Right,
so,
they show him meeting
yeah,
her.
So was he still part of S.H.I.E.L.D. then?
We don't know. But I think the key part that Ava discusses and Bill Foster mentions that she's decaying, basically. She doesn't have much time to live.
No, she's on a clock. And because
she's a very short clock, and that's why she wanted to steal the lab and steal
his
component.
Yeah, because she realizes, or through Bill Foster, it says, like, that through the quantum realm we can pull energy to stabilize you.
Right,
and
to make you a whole physical being again.
Yeah, so she won't fall apart.
Right. And so while we get this little backstory, so then Hank Pym, Scott Lang, and Hope pull up outside where she's at. And she's like in this chamber sleeping, like this hyperbaric chamber that she can sleep in that like mm-hmm. kind of stabilizes her a little bit. So they sneak in. And they see the
building is like expanded, like behind a factory of some sort.
Right,
so,
right, right.
So they go in there and they swipe the component. Right,
right, right. Well, no. They go to her lab. They go to where she's living and where she's in.
Oh yeah, but they're stealing the building and
right,
the component.
The building's in the little still, roll-on suitcase. Shrunk. Right, and so they grab that. And they actually grab the component.
Yeah, because without the two pieces, they can't build the tunnel. Right. Because they're under a time limit, too.
Right, right.
They have 2 hours to get this going.
Or something, right.
You know, because the signal or, you know, they've got the signal locked in, so they know exactly where they need to go. to get to Janet.
In the quantum realm, the subatomic level. Otherwise, it'll reset itself.
And then it'll be another 100 years before it's able to do
so
that.
So they're on a clock, and this Ava Starr or Ghost
so
is on a clock.
So both of them are on a clock. They're because she's going to disintegrate in a couple of days.
Right, right, right.
And they got a couple of hours.
Right,
and
right. So they go, and they actually do take the stuff. But then they look back into her chamber, and she's not there. They're like, uh-oh.
Yeah,
and then they're knocked out.
Yeah,
they all get knocked out. Well, no, Scott Lang gets knocked out. He goes in, but then of course she goes to retrieve the others.
Everybody gets knocked out. So she wakes them all up and says,
"Well, Scott wakes up. Scott wakes up, and she's talking to Scott. Ava's talking to Scott alone.
And this is where they find out that Bill Foster is a bad guy,
right? Because he shows. Well, they think he's a bad guy. He shows up.
Well, he didn't have to agree to all this.
No. You're right. You're right. Right. But I mean, initially, like, oh shit, he's a bad guy, right? He's another villain in this movie.
Yeah.
And
he's too compliant. I mean, just you know, because you know, well, he,
well, he feels sorry for her. I really think he feels
well,
sorry.
Well, he
for
was trying to save her, and she doesn't really, you know, she's doing the morality of this that she's coming first, you know, because
right.
she wants to save herself first.
I mean, if you're in her shoes, it's hard to argue with that. You know, I mean, if you only have a few days to live and you have an operation or a tool that can save you, you'll do anything to
get
it. Yeah,
they're all tied to the chair, and then Scott's phone goes off because it's quacking.
Right, right, and it's his daughter.
Yeah.
And so I think Bill Foster goes, okay, you know, this is your let me get it. And so he does that
because
he goes, oh, it's 911. It's an emergency. She must be in trouble. She must be in danger.
Yeah, and it has to be a soccer shoe emergency.
Right, right, exactly. But she goes, Dad, you know, where are my soccer cleats for, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sick. I can't come over.
Right,
blah, blah, blah.
They're trying to do FaceTime and stuff. So yeah, so he's like, I'll call you back, honey. And then click. And I guess it's enough of a distraction because I forget how they get out of this. But I mean, they're all tied up. Hank's tied up. You know.
They're all tied up.
Well, first Scott's awake with Ava.
Well, he uses the suit malfunctions and shrinks him out of his binds. Don't we cut back to the ex-con office because the Sonny shows up there?
Yes.
And they inject him with something that's not truth serum, but it is truth serum.
Well, okay. So
and
Sonny's
this is the beautiful thing,
right? Sonny Burch is trying to put the squeeze on
because he wants the component.
He wants the component, and he tracked it to this place that this is Scott's
office.
Because
the FBI bad guy that he's got a connection to,
right, right, got him to this office.
Yeah.
So there's Michael Pena's character. There's all the characters. You know, T.I.'s in there,
mm-hmm.
and so they have a little confrontation. And so Michael Pena's character's like, yeah, sure, yeah, yeah, I'll tell you. And so they still inject them. And he goes, well, like, Scott Lang's, like, really stressed out. And so Michael Bay, like, in the first movie, it's, like, one of the funniest scenes of – it's the funniest scene of any Marvel.
He distorts the – well, he goes through what he – the timeline is, but his own version of it.
Right, which is –
and even, it's brilliantly right. done.
And he's – I mean, he's a talker. I mean, Michael Pena's character is a massive – Luis – I mean, in the first movie, he established it. And so they show Scott Lang in prison with long hair, and Luis has, like, the Jerry curl and all that stuff. And they're just – and like, Scott – Sonny's like, wait. But no. He's like, I'm getting to it. And, and he's still talking from, like, you know, events there, from years ago.
There is a forum and a big surge on the internet right now asking – you know, they want him to explain the Marvel Cinematic Universe from the beginning.
Luis is the only one that can do it.
That would be a 2-hour movie, but it would be the most brilliant, funniest thing you ever saw.
It would be the craziest, funniest mate possible. I mean,
you know, what they should do is they should, because right now you're able to buy, like, Phase 1, Phase 2, and Phase 3,
right.
Then the Avengers buy all three of them together. Right. It would be. They should just have the one to tie it all together. One huge set of all 23 movies, and then a separate movie, which would be him explaining this entire thing.
The TED Talk of the MCU by Luis, by Michael Pena, and he seriously.
You know, what would be really great is if they reveal that he's actually a Watcher.
Like
Stan Lee.
That might be too much. But anyway, so Luis is like just going on. I mean, he's just droning. I mean, I thought I talk a lot, right? And you know that. But Luis.
No, I've never noticed that since we're going on 1 hour now.
Whatever. Okay, fine. So Luis kind of, he tells him a little bit. He tells him like a little bit of information.
Yeah, but he gives as much as he can.
Right, but he's also like, in a way, I kind of feel like he's stalling. Because he knows.
Well,
I mean,
he doesn't know what he should reveal, so he reveals everything.
Right, he's just killing as much time as possible, which is always. But it's the funniest scene in all 22 of these Marvel movies so far. There's no question about it. For me, it's the funniest part.
Well,
it's
then they cut back to Hank and everybody, and they've expanded the building. They've gone in there and locked in the component. I try to jump the gun. This is where we find out they only got a 2-hour window.
Right.
And so they were able to lock in, and when they turn the tunnel on and they stabilize it, Janet focuses. You know, she uses Scott like a telephone.
Right,
and
exactly.
She locks into him and takes over his body.
Right.
And fixes the
calculations.
The calculations for the and they talk to her.
Right.
And everybody, so they realize that that she's still alive. Yes. That everything is going to work, but they got 2 hours, and it's actually two. And it's I wrote down 2 centuries before the alignment will happen again.
Right. So again, basically, this is their window. Otherwise, they're screwed. I mean,
the
mom will be
shot
gone.
At this.
Yeah, this is it. So,
so while this is going on and everything, let's see.
But also remember when Luis is spilling the beans, right? The Sonny Burch talks
to
the FBI. Right.
The ghost comes back through there and steals the component, and so they have to go take that back, or...
Right, and then the FBI come and they arrest Hank
and
Hope,
everybody
right.
else.
Right.
And then Sonny's friend from the FBI steals the building, the ghost kills that...
Right,
FBI
agent,
takes the building,
right.
and the component.
Right,
well, it's in the building.
Yeah, it's in the building.
Yeah.
But then Hank and Hope are arrested, so they have to escape. They escape from the FBI office
yes.
with Scott Lang's help, basically.
Yes, he still got the suit that's unstable.
Right, exactly.
And
so
Yeah, and then they're like, how are we going to follow the building? And they says, well, I put a tracker in the building.
Right,
and
exactly.
he uses the ants as GPS.
Correct.
To get
right.
to the building. And they got 15 minutes left on the clock, or they're going to lose Janet entirely. And they do this beautiful car chase with Scott and Hope.
Right.
And Louise. And the funny hysterical part is the Pez.
Yes. Right. Because they have the Pez. And so he throws the thing on it, makes like life size, and it knocks off like one or two of the motorcycle, like the gang, the Scott Burch's guys.
And he goes you got Pez.
Right, you got Pez, man, exactly.
Oh, and this is where Stan Lee's cameo pops in.
Yes.
Because Wasp is firing her lasers and Hank Pym particles out the back window of the van, right. And she's shrinking like motorcycles and all this other stuff. And with stray shot, hits Stan Lee's car, and it shrinks to nothing. And he goes, "Well, the '60s were fun, but I'm paying for it now."
Exactly right. It was actually a Chevy Malibu he's almost like putting the key in the door, like about to open the door.
And the car disappears.
It goes like a Hot Wheels size, and he's like, "Okay, good scene."
And this was Ant-Man and Wasp, and he had a cameo.
Yeah.
He had a big cameo in
Captain Marvel too. Oh yeah.
Yeah, which they broke the fourth wall for.
Right.
And sadly his last one's going to be in Endgame.
Yeah, right. Sure.
I thought he had one in Spider-Man: Far From Home, but I think this is it.
Okay. All right. So anyway,
they go through this big thing where they have to fight Ghost again, his suit keeps going out of whack.
Yes, it does.
Which is really hysterical.
But Scott Lang and Hope are distracting Ghost or Ava while Hank Pym enters the quantum realm, as they show that clock of 15 minutes, and he's like this. It looks like a spaceship or something, like a vehicle.
Yeah, it's a shuttle of some sort,
right.
Because it's a two-seater. Because the reason why he's using that is because he didn't have two suits.
Correct.
Because he had to have some way of transporting Janet back to normal size and this reality.
I guess. It's not really explained, but yeah. So this is like a two-person shuttlecraft, basically.
Yeah.
So while Scott Lang and Hope are fighting, like you said, Ava and the suits getting wacky and stuff, and they're fighting in all kinds of buildings and stuff like that. Right.
But Hank has gone to the quantum realm. He's gone.
The clock's ticking. He shows the 15 o'clock, and boom, he's got to go.
And we see the water bears and his
yes.
and which is really cool because those are actual real creatures.
Yes, you know they are. Those yellowish things. I don't know the species, but he kind of gets stuck there a little bit. He gets stuck because
they lose the signal and the shuttle's got to recalibrate.
So he's paused, and then of course it does, and boom, he shoots through it again.
And he pops through the quantum realm. Finally, he breaches where she was. So he's at the quantum range, and it goes through, and he crashes the shuttle.
Right.
And when I first saw this, I thought, like, okay, well, now he's stuck.
Well, I thought he's stuck, but what was more fascinating to me was how when he's like walking in the plane, so to speak, and he's getting like hallucinogenic, you know, thoughts.
He's losing his reality.
Right. Because they're saying you lose your reality in touch with reality in time and space. Now, that's in the quantum realm. Now we have this big, massive battle.
Now, keep in mind that both Hank and Janet have both said that in the quantum realm, time and space has no meaning as we know it.
Correct. Which is crucial to the end scene, but also to, I think, this whole 22 movie saga.
And there's also time vortexes.
Yes, time vortexes, right. So
okay,
basic manipulation of time and the bending of time-space, which is an Einstein theory, of course.
Hmm.
So that's interesting. Yes, that's important, I think, for Endgame. But anyway.
And they do a lot of visual stuff.
Very trippy stuff.
And then back with Scott, because his suit gets out of whack so much that he uses a truck as a skateboard.
Right, exactly. He's like Gigantor Man in San Francisco. And so at this point, Scott Burch has run off again with the lab. The lab is like a suitcase, like the carry-on, the roll-on. And because the henchmen grab it, right? Because Wasp is fighting them and all that stuff. And Ava the Ghost is there. Mm-hmm. So Scott Burch is running to
Fisherman's Wharf, basically.
Yeah.
You see Fisherman's Wharf, and he
gets on aboard
it's like an Alcatraz, like a launch. I call it a launch.
Yeah, like a person transport of some sort somewhere.
It's a tourist boat. I mean, I went last in 2012. I remember we didn't get a chance to go, but there's many tourist cruises you can take from the various piers at Fisherman's Wharf. I think this was Pier 39, which we talked about.
You've
been to Pier 39. I've been to Pier 39, where they have the launches that go to Alcatraz, and also they have the Hard Rock Cafe is right there, and the aquarium is right there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Further down Fisherman's Wharf is Budan Bakery, where they
well, made sourdough. There's also that battleship of some sort.
Yes,
we didn't go on that because we ran out of time.
That's, I think, like Pier 29 or 30. That's a little bit.
Well, we walked the whole thing. So
Yes. And again, anybody who knows San Francisco,
that was a long walk.
And if you don't know San Francisco, listeners, I almost will beg you to go to San Francisco. I mean, L.A. is a beautiful city. Chicago is a beautiful city. Miami, New York, what have you. But San Francisco is truly, I mean, the bay with the Pacific. Obviously, there's a lot of history at Fisherman's Wharf. Again, the invention of sourdough bread. I know I'm off in the weeds here. Sourdough bread was invented by Budan Bakery, which is still in operation at Fisherman's Wharf, and they make fresh sourdough bread every day, which I love. Anyway, back to the movie. So Scott is now chasing Sonny Birch, who's on this
boat.
But he
manages to get his suit to work, so he dives into the water. And he manages to get small and uses an ant to try to get to the boat.
But the seagulls keep eating, like they're chomping several ants. And actually, while he's riding on Antonio, if I remember properly.
He had another ant that was that he nicknamed. That was an Antonio. Ulysses S. Grant.
Right. Well, and so he like falls off him, but then like that one gets eaten too. So basically, all these
flying ants. He finally gets close enough, and he falls into the water as ant man size.
Right. And so
therefore he managed to get the suit to work, but the problem is that he goes back to being giant man size, but
it's like Gigantor size. It's
huge, he went beyond what he did in Civil War.
Oh yeah, way bigger. Yeah,
because the news when they were showing a newscast, they were going like, "There's an 80 to 85 foot man in the water."
It's like breaking news, you know, and everything presented this gigantic human.
And that's where the FBI finds out about him, and so they go chasing after him.
Right, they go, "Oh, that's him."
Yeah, that's Wong.
Wu was there, and so. So Scott is, and then Birch is like this little Putian guy.
Yeah,
like with his.
If you see the trailer, they drop a funny line in this scene that wasn't in the movie. He goes like, he's like, "Don't worry, I'm not going to eat any of you,"
or something of that sort.
When I first saw the movie, I thought like, "Oh, they're going to say the line. They're going to say the line." I'm like, "Oh."
Yeah. So of course he grabs like Sonny Birch like by his coat like a little doll basically.
Yeah.
Like,
he
like
grabs the building and he goes like, "Let go. You're just making a fool of yourself."
Right. Right. And he goes, "Don't worry. I won't hurt you, anybody. I'm just, you know."
And he manages to take the building and get back to shoreline. But here's the problem with being that size can't regulate the oxygen correctly.
Right. So he's like short of breath, like already. You can tell he's like having trouble breathing. And so he drops the building like on the wharf, on the pier.
And luckily it lands right side up and it starts sliding down the hill.
Right.
And he blacks out.
Right. And he falls into the water. He falls back in the water
with
the suit on as gigantic guy.
Yeah, giant man. The problem, what's really nice is that the reason why they're wearing the helmet is because it's got to be able to adjust the oxygen. Because if you're microscopic or really small, it's got to take the air particles and make it small enough for your small lungs to be able to handle it.
Exactly. So or if you're gigantic.
It can't regulate. It can't make it bigger.
It can't handle as much.
So there's a reason why.
He was like he was low on oxygen, right? His percentage of oxygen is low, which is if you're below, I think 90% or something, you'll pass out.
Well, 92%.
Is it 90?
So you start getting like really you can tell.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, so he passed out into the ocean. Louise shows up.
Louise and Wasp show
she
up.
She shows up,
and
right.
so she dives. She goes human size.
Right.
I'm not going to say man. Human size. Right. Jumps in the water after him.
Right.
She's trying to find him.
Right. Right.
Okay,
exactly.
So let's complete that thought. So she finally finds him.
Right.
But she does to rescue him. She manages to turn his suit back on and get him
shrink
to human size.
But then she has to find him in the silt because it's very silty down there. It's murky down there.
But doesn't she go giant size to get him out of the water?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, she could, giant woman.
Right.
I don't recall that ever being happening in the comics.
Again, they're taking some liberties with it. But the other thing is, the lab now goes normal size.
Well, no.
Ghost.
Ghost grabs it and grabs the controls to the
from Louise. Right, exactly.
And it just right in the middle of the street, right in the pier, expands it.
Right, exactly.
Because she's running out of time.
Right, she wants to
She needs to get in there to use that. Right. So she rushes in there and
Meanwhile, all this is happening while Hank finds his wife. He finds Janet Van Dyne.
And she uses she's somehow or another has these powers now.
Yes.
And she is able to stabilize him in this realm.
Right, in the
quantum realm.
Because
he's falling apart.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So,
and she goes like, what are you doing here? He says, how did this all this happen or anything? He says, well, the realm does a whole bunch of different things. And it says this not only has to do with time and space, but evolution.
Right, right. There's a lot to unpack there. I didn't catch all that, but you're right. So she stabilizes his emotions, his mental thought,
and his body too. Right, and so she's able to survive in this realm too.
Right.
I'm really thinking that they were done because he's with her, and that was it.
I thought so
too. Because they already have an Ant-Man. They don't need two.
But no. But so they go back into the shuttle, so to speak. And he goes, let's go home. And so they take off.
Well, the problem is that evidently the shuttle knows that the lab at that time wasn't full size.
Right, exactly. So they're waiting. They're like waiting.
And
basically.
It says unable to enlarge. Lab is not a full size.
Right.
Because you really think about it, if they're in the quantum realm. Inside of a lab that is shrunk small, does that mean the quantum realm is even smaller?
That I don't know, but of course, if they do reemerge in the lab, they would be two inch tall. They'd be ant size. So can they?
Because
I don't know.
Yeah. So
it's never really discussed.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's a little thing you have to wrap your mind around.
Right.
But when the lab goes big and the ghost goes in there
and
she sets up the equipment, she rewires it to go into her little booth thing.
Right. Like her
and
little.
And she starts sucking the energy out of Janet because she figures that she's the only one that's able
to survive.
So she's able to take that survival energy and pump it through her, and so
she
becomes stable.
Exactly. So Wasp, gets Scott back up, and so they get back into the lab, and there's this beautiful like scene where you see the shuttle like about to appear, and Ghost is still using the energy. And Scott and the Wasp are fighting
and Hope.
Her. And Hope. And they finally, disconnect
everything,
just literally in time for the show. It's like, Hope, Wasp, was fighting, and she was, laying on the tracks, basically.
Right.
So if
Scott
pushed her out of the way, otherwise she would, have been smushed or something like that.
Yeah.
So, dying. So that all happens. So
the shuttle comes back.
It's his smoke, and everybody's hat,
And Janet comes out, and she recognizes there's, because... Even though that Ava hadn't been in the realm, she's been exposed to it. So she feels the connection just like she felt the connection with Scott. So she uses her new powers to stabilize
Ava
right away, which
is a beautiful thing.
And so, therefore, she's not crazed and she's not going to disappear. She's not going to disintegrate.
Right. So she's stabilized at least.
So basically, everybody survives.
Right. And we don't know that right away. We see... Janet emerged from the shuttle, which looks damaged a little bit, and then so we see her looking, and she looks out, she sees what she believes to be her daughter, which is Hope, and it's like, Mom? And then, and she goes to hug her, and then she looks and says, sees Scott.
We've met.
Yeah, we've met, right? Mrs.
Pym.
Right. And then we're waiting, and I honestly thought Michael Douglas was dead. I thought Hank died, and it seemed like
they couldn't kill him. I'm fine. He's like, I'm so glad everybody asked me about me.
And he emerges, so everybody's there. So the Pym family is reunited together.
So now,
Scott Lang is okay, but then don't they have to get back to, remember they have to get back to Scott's house. Remember they have to meet the FBI.
Well, because the FBI saw him on the news.
Right,
so therefore they do a bait and switch because, the FBI sees the building out in the middle of nowhere. So they start going to the dock. They break two groups off,
and then
they go there, and then the Wu finds this giant Ant-Man against the building, and he's like, "Okay, so I finally got you, Scott." And he says, "Shrink down and turn yourself in," and it deflates.
Right,
so
almost like a balloon.
They basically they shrunk, they expanded the suit,
right?
And they used that as a distraction, as a bait and switch,
right? Because you see Scott in his underwear, like
running away, and then they managed to get him back,
right,
to his house,
right?
And then Wu shows up and goes like, "I finally got you," and there he is,
right? And but the daughter's saying, "Oh no, you can't go. Daddy's really sick. He's throwing, you know, it's really
because
bad."
They realize, you know, because the daughter and the wife, the ex-wife and the boyfriend see him on the news, and they rush to the house, and they finally put all the pieces together, and they cover his tracks,
basically. Right? They do. So he's okay. So they show him getting his ankle bracelet removed,
finally off,
and then Bill Foster's still there. Bill Foster's now, you know, okay. Working with Hank Pym, trying to work with Ava to get her stabilized. Mm-hmm. Because it's almost like he's like she's like an adopted daughter kind of a thing. Right. You know, not exactly.
Yeah, he's protecting her because you know he knew the family, so he's doing this out of guilt.
But also, I think you know we don't see any family by Bill Foster, so this would be like in essence his only like daughter like figure he might have in his life. That's the kind of vibe I got from the movie. I mean, that's just my...
Right. Well, in the comics books, I think he did have a family.
Okay. But there's no mention of it all here at all. No. So he's taken on Ghost.
She's getting fixed because Janet knows how to get particles and everything from the realm to stabilize her.
Right.
Because constant exposure is going to cure her.
Right.
So now everybody's happy. All the families are together.
The ex-con gets a contract. They're making money, they're happy. Yeah, the
business
up and up.
Is fixed.
Everything's on the up and
everybody,
up.
Everybody, they tie a bow on everything.
Yes, very nice. Except,
don't forget the aunt playing music at the end.
Right. But except for so let's talk about the real aunt.
The movie ends and everybody's happy.
Right. Tie the bow. Everything's happy. Here come the lights, the credits.
Yeah, and then the end credit scene happens. It's basically they're on a parking garage,
like upper level parking garage in San Francisco,
and they're using Scott's van.
Louis's van,
and they put the quantum tunnel in there,
right?
Because they needed something a little more portable, or they couldn't use the building anymore, because it's been damaged too much. So they took the tunnel, rebuilt it in there,
right? Right, and it's in the back of the van.
Now the new Ant-Man suit has obviously been fixed, so it's stable now,
right.
And they have a device to collect the energy they're using to help Ava.
Give her another
few doses.
Right.
So there's Scott, there's Hope, there's Hank, there's Janet.
They're all there. Janet, Hank, and Hope are all managing.
We don't see Bill.
We don't see Ava, we don't see Bill, we don't see Luis, we don't see anybody. We only see four people in this end credit scene. We see Scott Lang, the new Ant-Man, Hank Pym, the original Ant-Man, Hope Van Dyne, the daughter, and we see Janet Van Dyne. And Janet, Hope, and Hank are all like manning controls to make sure Scott, they have like a walkie-talkie system. So Scott, they zap Scott into the quantum tunnel.
And he's got the collector device. He goes way past the quantum realm, where everybody was.
And he's collecting the energy.
And he's scooping all that up.
They're saying, okay, Scott, we hear you. Okay, tell us what you're doing. Yeah, I'm collecting this stuff.
And he fills it all up.
He's ready to go back. What? And so...
Time to bring me back.
So Hope goes, okay, I'll bring it back in 5, 4, 3, and he's like a shh, and that's it. It goes silent. He's like, guys, okay, it's not funny. Like, okay, haha, Hank, stop playing around.
Mm-hmm.
And so
they cut to the van, and there's nothing but all these ashes falling to the ground, which ties to the end of Infinity War
with the snap.
So going by that, the snap happening all over the universe all at the same time.
Right.
The end scene happened.
Right. The end credits scene at the snap time. Right.
So therefore, rewinding the clock, this is obviously days or weeks after Ant-Man Wasp happened.
Correct.
So therefore, Ant-Man Wasp happened
Before the Battle of Wakanda, basically in Infinity War.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Or at the same time. Well, after way before.
Right, yeah. Right. Right.
So therefore, the snap happened when Thanos does do the snap.
Right. Exactly.
So we know the timeline of Ant-Man Wasp corresponding to
very closely.
To Infinity War,
right.
Now, here's the thing is that...
So Scott Lang, Ant-Man, is now trapped in the quantum realm. The
quantum realm.
Right. There's nobody, at least, that we can see visually.
Don't forget that his regular, you know, this is a new suit, so it doesn't have a regular, so he can't pull the same trick he did last time.
Right. So he's got to get out of the quantum realm
somehow,
in some other
now,
way.
Here's the thing, is that did he survive the snap, or because he was in the quantum realm, it protected him from the snap?
That's true. That's a very good question.
The quantum realm, you know, everybody has said, Hank and Janet and everybody else has, and Bill, you know, all they've stressed is that the quantum realm is outside our realm of reality,
right,
and it affects time
space. So in theory, Scott Lang could have become ashes if he was in San Francisco still. But because,
could he have been?
Well, we don't know.
What about Bill and Ava?
We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Louise and all those people.
We have no
clue.
Nothing is hinted at. And then there's a final credit scene after all the credits.
Where they show the TV, and there's snow on the TV,
right,
and there's
right.
all these emergency
right.
signals
right.
going
right.
off.
Right.
And all
the emergency broadcast system is on. And all you see is
the aunt playing
Antonio
the drums.
Playing the drums like nothing's happening, because, of course, he doesn't know anything.
He's oblivious to what's going on, because
right.
that's what he's programmed to do, is to duplicate
Scott's
pattern
and
of doing things.
And he's still doing it, right.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, so again, this final end credit scene is crucial, because we've seen the trailers about Endgame that the Avengers are wearing like quantum realm type suits
like. They're theorizing, because they look very much like the Ant-Man suits and the quantum suit that Hank wore.
Yes.
Exactly. So therefore, you know, everybody's theorizing those are quantum suits.
That's what I think. I mean,
could be anything.
Well, again,
they could be spacesuits, because
they could be spacesuits.
Yeah, because we see a very brief scene of them being aboard the ship with Rocket and everybody.
True. They could be spacesuits, right?
Yeah. So we have no clue what they are, what they're for, or where it takes place in the movie.
Right.
And we jumped right into Endgame, but now
you said
at the beginning that this was a buy.
Well, I mean, this one, I think this
And the music was funny. The scenes were funny.
Yes,
the characterization was deep.
I
mean, they built the character. There wasn't any two-dimensional characters in here.
No, not at all. I mean, all
And they did all this in 2 hours.
Yes, it wasn't a very long film.
Two hours and 14 minutes.
It wasn't a long film for Marvel Studios. Yeah. It was a good sized film.
The soundtrack was good. The characters were good. It fleshed out from the second one. And it almost continued from the second one, but the first one, and it was a standalone. If you didn't see the first one, explained enough for you to pick it up, so you didn't go like, I'm the lost.
Right.
No, you picked up enough.
If you had to skip Ant-Man, you could. You shouldn't, really,
right.
because it makes the characters from Ant-Man so much more meatier,
mm-hmm.
Like Luis and the extra characters. But yeah, this one is a fantastic movie. It's funny. It's hilarious.
It was very enjoyable.
But at the same time... Well, I mean, you know, again, let's just cover your theory. Your theory is about Infinity War.
We'll talk about that during next week.
So your theory then would be those are not quantum realm suits. That would be your theory. They can't be. They don't have to be.
Well, I'm saying that they could be almost anything
this
point, because we don't know where that takes place in the movie.
But basically, Scott Lang is stuck in the quantum realm.
Right.
At the
end of this movie.
At the time of the snap.
Yeah. He's stuck there with no way home, because he can't use the suit like he used last time. He's got the quantum energy he has scooped up,
right.
but there is he has no contact to the normal universe as he knows it.
Right.
He's completely, utterly cut off, and the only thing he's got is the suit.
Right, so he could be trapped there like Janet was
until
somebody else finds him, or he finds a way out. And that's I'm pretty sure that'll be addressed in Endgame. That's my theory.
Okay.
So, love the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is on Netflix right now, so if anybody has a Netflix account,
mm-hmm.
I highly recommend you watch the movie.
Yes, definitely. And since this is going to be re-released on Saturday, if you're going to be listening to this on the Saturday before
Endgame, you should watch Netflix this weekend.
420.
Yeah.
And so therefore... the movie is released on 4/26 in the States,
right.
and 4/24 in China.
That's true, right? 4/25 really
is the early release. The world premiere party is going to be broadcast on Monday night, the 20th. That would make that the 22nd?
22nd. Monday, yes. Monday's the 22nd.
Yeah, so,
which is also Earth Day.
If you're still listening to this before the 22nd, go catch it on TV and all over the internet.
Right.
They're broadcasting a lot of this live, so all the characters are going to be there. And then if you want to, if you still haven't seen it and you're still listening to this live or, you know, before the 26th,
right.
Catch our pregame.
Ethan
will be there. Yeah, pregame on our end game. Ethan will be back then. And what we're going to do is we're going to do kind of like a three-parter. It's going to be basically talking about quick overview of all 23 movies.
Yes.
Then what we see.
What we have seen, legitimate, legal footage from Marvel Studios.
Without any theories, because there is a million theories out there.
Right.
And then where we think that, you know, where this is going to go and how this is going to impact Phase 4, because this is the door closing on Phase 3. This is the final film of Phase 3.
Right, Endgame.
So listen to that on Monday, and throughout the weekend and all the way leading up to the 25th, we're going to be throwing a whole bunch of things out on all social medias. In fact, you can go to geekculture.online to listen to the podcast. You can listen to the podcast on any place that you listen to podcasts at. You can go to all our social medias, such as Facebook and Instagram at Geek Culture Online. You can go to Twitter, our favorite, which is
Your Geek Culture. Check it out.
You can write to me directly at patrick@geekculture.online. You can write to Larry at geekculture.online. Write to Ethan and yell at him for not being here at ethan@geekculture.online.
We're very excited.
Yes.
This has been a 22-week
adventure.
Yes.
And this is going to be this has never been done in Hollywood history. This has never been done with comic books before. It's never been done in any place before where something has accumulated into such a big thing. There are Marvel has released comic books tying to all the movies. There are all the extra features that are on all the CDs. Their TV shows tie into this together. So movies alone, there is 50 hours plus of movies. And the final time for Endgame is 3 hours and 2 minutes.
Right, which is the longest any Marvel Studios or really any superhero movie has been. So, yeah.
So my
question is for listeners. Are you ready for the end game?
Yes. All right. See ya with pregame.
Bye-bye.
Bye.